On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
As a beach guy, I always enjoy novels that have something to do with the seashore. And this particular novel takes place actually only two states up from where I grew up in Daytona Beach. It's set along the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and it has two sets of people who will become romantically involved in two different world wars. I think I can say that much without giving too much away. The name of the book is Yesterday's Tides. It's from Bethany House, which is a division of Baker Publishing Group, and the author is Rosanna M. White, a Christie Award-winning author who has long claimed that words are the air she breathes. You can find out more about her and her stories at RosannaMWhite.com. Easy to remember, RosannaMWhite.com. Rosanna, thanks very much for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Thanks so much for having me.
These two love stories, and I hesitate to say very much more about them, are particularly interesting because there are connections of a sort between them, but we're not going to give too much of that away right up front. What made you decide to set your novels on the Outer Banks?
Well, I actually originally came up with this story way back the summer after I graduated from college. I won't tell you how long ago that was. It was a while. And I love the Outer Banks. My husband and I got married there. Both of our families have vacationed there most of our lives. So I had always kind of wanted to write a book set in the Outer Banks. So I came up with this story about Louisa and Rem, who are the main characters in the World War I line. And I wrote it actually as a contemporary set in the Outer Banks I know and love today. That story ended up being mostly chucked out the window. I just kept the characters and some of the things surrounding them in this version of the book. But I was always kind of keeping an eye out every time I vacationed down there for the perfect spot where everything would take place in these books, this book. And so eventually, because I don't usually vacation on Ocracoke, I'm usually on Hatteras Island. One year we went over to Ocracoke on the ferry, and I was like, oh, this is it. This is where Louisa is from. So I knew that that was where I wanted to set it when I rewrote it again as a historical.
Well, I have to admit that I am more inclined to read historical novels than I am to read pure romances. I'm perfectly okay with historical novels having a romantic element, but there has to be a good historical story to really hook me. And I found that in this book of yours. This is the first of your books that I've read, and I really enjoyed the interplay between the characters and the uniqueness of both of the situations, and the fact that we have one set of stories that takes place during the Great War and the second set that takes place during World War II. They both have to do with the Ocracoke Inn, right? If I recall, is that a real place?
Sort of. It's actually based on a historical house on Ocracoke that was built as a private residence, but then was turned into an inn called the Soundfront Inn. That was in operation up until I don't remember exactly when it stopped. Around the time period I was working in. And it's now actually a rental house that you can rent and stay in on your vacation. It has no air conditioning. It's very off-grid. But a really, really cute place. When we stayed down there for a week, we rented a house that was just down the lane from it. So when we walked, we found it. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm going to base my inn on. So I named it something different, and I took a few liberties to make it suit my own needs, of course. But it was based on a real location, yeah.
Well, now, your two main characters are both women, Louisa and Evie. They have some things in common, but mostly they're very unique characters. And I was particularly intrigued by Louisa, who we meet first in the story. Tell us a little bit about both of these characters and what made them interesting for you to create.
Excellent. Happy to do that. So Louisa was the first character I came up with when I was coming up with the story way, way back when. So I wanted her to be an island girl. She had grown up there all her life, part of this very tight-knit community, and wanting a chance to go away, at least for a little while, to go to school, to come back, and then life intervenes and things happen and, you know, everything kind of gets turned on its head as things always do in books. And part of the thing that turned everything on its head for her was meeting Rem, who is from a very different world. She's from a working class background. He's from the upper classes. So in the eyes of society, they are not at all suited, but there's just something that really connects in their souls. So it was just so much fun to explore that relationship and to get to know Louisa. I feel like I have carried her with me a long time. So it's been, you know, 20 years since I first developed this character. And she's always traveled with me. So every time I go to the Outer Banks, which is almost every year, I'm seeing it through Louisa's eyes. And I'm remembering the lessons she taught me as I go through life. So she's just always been very special to me. But then I realized that all the really interesting things in the Outer Banks happened during World War II. So that's when there were the ships that were sunk off the coast, and there were sailors who washed ashore. There were rumors of German spies hiding in the woods, which are totally just paranoia. But the author in me had to go, but what if they weren't? What if those rumors were true?
Right.
And that's where I really developed Evie and her character, and as a way to bring a World War II line into the story and have a new generation in charge of the Ocracoke Inn. And she was also very unique for me. She's very spiritually in tune with the Lord and with the spirit and with who she should be praying for and how. And she has this very interesting prayer life where she collects seashells and sea glass as she's praying, walking along the beach. And then she turns them into jewelry that helps her remember to pray for the people she was praying for when she found them. So that was a fun thing that I got to weave in for Evie.
That's really lovely. And there's another, there's something else about Evie that's interesting, is that she has a relationship to the U.S. Coast Guard. The Coast Guard does not get mentioned much in historical fiction, which is really a shame, because these are folks that, well, first of all, they're the only military branch that still has training on actual sailing ships, you know, and so that's kind of unique. Plus the fact that the Coast Guard is on duty and busy year-round. If there's no war going on, the Coast Guard still fights smugglers and rescues people in storms and all that. So during wartime, the Coast Guard gets called into active duty, and so there's some of that going on.
Yeah.
There's also another thing that was kind of interesting is the sinking of a British boat by a German U-boat off the coast of North Carolina. And I know that there were, because I grew up in a beach town too, that there were submarines all along the eastern coast and even the Gulf Coast during World War II. They ranged far and wide for the first part of the war. Is this based on a real ship, or was that a... Tell us about that.
The trawler, actually, it was a fishing ship that was commissioned by the British Navy, turned into a warship, a military ship, and sent to protect America's East Coast before we had a chance to build up our own Navy. So England sent all sorts of repurposed ships to help protect us, and the Bedfordshire was one of them. And it was sunk off the coast of North Carolina in the Outer Banks on May 12th, I believe it was. So that anniversary is coming up real fast here. And the seven sailors did wash ashore onto Ocracoke, and they buried them in what had been part of the family cemetery and called it the British Cemetery. And they actually still have a memorial service there every year on the anniversary of their death. So it's a very inspiring story, these British sailors who gave their life to protect us. And, something that Ocracoke is very proud to remember. And they really did contact the widow of the captain of the ship. And two of the locals went over to visit her and became good friends. And so there was some really interesting stories there, that I wanted to pull on.
There were some little things that you mentioned in the book, too, that I thought was interesting. There's a special tea that they make in North Carolina. I'd never heard of this tea, and so I researched it after I read your book and found out this was not something that you invented, that this is an actual thing.
Yes. It's Yopin. At least that's how they say it on Ocracoke,
Okay.
So it's made from the Yopin tree, which is actually a kind of holly tree, And so you take the leaves and you roast them, and it is the only plant in North America that is naturally caffeinated. Hmm. So these teas leaves have been brewed into tea by Native Americans for millennia, as long as they've been here. So when settlers came, the Native Americans taught them about this tea that they could roast from the leaves of the open tree. And so it became a staple, especially on the islands, where they weren't always in contact with other settlers, with other communities, and they couldn't always depend on ship meal tea or coffee coming through, especially in times of war when they weren't getting deliveries, or just when, you know, they'd had a long winter and ships couldn't get in. Yep.
That's amazing. The fact that we have a native caffeinated beverage, and this is something that is unique to the Outer Banks, because I've never heard of finding it anywhere. Maybe there are grocery stores around the country that sell it, and I just never knew what it was. But I found that very interesting.
I haven't been able to find it in any grocery stores. I did find some, actually, from someone in Florida who has it down there. They grow it, apparently, in the Everglades, too.
Oh, okay.
So you can get it from a few locations, and I have it on my website now. You can order some if you're really interested in what it tastes like.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by that. In case you're just joining us, we're talking to Rosanna M. White, who's the author of Yesterday's Tides from Bethany House, which is a division of Baker Publishing Group. And you can find out more about Rosanna by going to her media platforms, such as her website, which is rosannamwhite.com. You can also go at Rosanna M. White, and you could also go to BakerPublishingGroup.com to find out more about her books. This is not your first book, obviously, since on the front of the book it says Christie Award-winning author. They weren't just hoping that this one was going to be one. You already have won a Christie Award. I've seen that before, and I know what it is, but I don't know if I've ever asked any of the authors we've ever had on the show what exactly is the Christie Award. Would you take just a moment to fill us in on that? And then we'll get back to Yesterday's Ties.
Absolutely. The Christie Award is kind of the premier award in Christian fiction. It was named after the novel Christie, that was one of the pioneers of Christian fiction. So we just kind of wanted to give a nod to that wonderful book. So the Christie Award has awards in a bunch of different categories in Christian fiction. There's, you know, contemporary, mystery, suspense, historical romance, the kind of speculative, supernatural stuff, debut author, all the different categories are represented. And so, I've been nominated a couple times, but my first win was in 2020, I believe it was, for A Portrait of Loyalty, which was book 3 in my Codebreaker series.
Now, this particular book is more or less a standalone novel, at least at this point, because, frankly, it's got so many twists and turns in it. I would think that this would be a very difficult one to work into a series. You've got a lot of characters, but without getting too deep in the grass there, know that there's some interesting connections, even across the generations. You've got a set of lovers in World War I, a set of lovers in World War II. One of the interesting things in the World War I series, and that is Louisa has a friend who met and married somebody from France and moved to France, and she's very concerned about her friend because the mail has not been nearly as dependable from France since the Great War, as they called it then, World War I, began. If she was in Paris during World War II, the same situation would have been the case, except even more dire, of course. But research did you do into how Paris, which did not fall in the First World War but got dangerously close to it, you have written books set in World War I before, right?
Yeah, that's where many of my books have been set, yeah.
so you were able to use the research that you'd done for the other books and build on that for the era. Mm-hmm. And the type of situations and the First World War and the kind of carnage along the trench lines and all of that. Is this the first time that you've written about the Second World War?
Yeah, it is, actually. I always said it was way too modern for me, but then I decided, okay, let's dip my toes in.
So what did you find different about the two eras? At least, obviously, technology-wise, there's a lot of difference. But really, some of the same things that Louisa faces in 1918 are the same kind of things that Evie faces in 1942, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the things I learned as I was researching for all of my World War One books was that all the things I thought were unique to World War II actually had their roots in World War One. I mean, everything from, you know, goose-stepping soldiers in the German army to the intelligence game that was played, they all started in World War One, and pretty much everything from the Second World War was a direct result of what happened in World War One. It was kind of just like a to be continued of the war.
Right.
Technology had obviously continued to grow and be developed in between the wars, but the politics was actually very much the same. Nazism sprang very naturally from what had been the beliefs of Germany in World War One and Bolshevik. And so all these things from World War II are really an echo of the Great War. And that was something I wanted to explore and kind of bring out in this novel. Is I did it through looking at, you know, one community, a couple families, and how, you know, it impacted them in two different generations. But I used them as a kind of magnifying glass of the entire culture and the entire circumstance of how all these little things from World War One that we today might not even be aware of just rippled out and created this entire other war that spanned the globe again. And, you know, everything is so related, and the choices made in one generation have such a profound impact on the next.
I know that we have to be careful because, once again, the plot lines are really intriguing, and we don't want to give too many surprises away. One of the things that you addressed in this novel, in Yesterday's Tides, and which I'm thinking is part of the reason that we have the title the way it is that what has happened to the generations prior to you affects you, even if you weren't aware of those things happening.
Yeah, exactly.
This becomes something that both Louisa and Evie have to deal with. There are things that have happened in the past of their family that become parts of the mystery of their current time, that when they are young people and first meeting this important British person who's washed up on their beach, in both cases. One of them, well, okay, he doesn't wash up exactly, but it does come unexpectedly. And the other one actually literally washes up, is wounded, and he's a special agent. I'm not giving anything away because that's in the press stuff, so I figure that's
right.
Safe. But that's also interesting because this shows that Evie has skills in Morse code, for example, that Sterling Bertrand is fascinated to discover. That's not the kind of thing he usually runs into with women that he meets or anybody that he meets.
You can expect that of your innkeeper.
Yes, exactly. But it has to do with her connection to the U.S. Coast Guard, and which makes her a valuable ally in his quest and the very reason that he came to be in Ocracoke, North Carolina in the first place, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Was there a character in a novel somewhere that, or in real life, I should say, that was this kind of guy, and that's what sort of gave you the idea? Or was it just the fact that you have done historical novels before set in wartime, and these are the kind of things that happen?
They definitely are the kinds of things that happen. And when I wrote my Codebreaker series, which is all about the intelligence room 40 in World War One in England, I learned a lot about British intelligence, and that included field agents. And the man in charge of the entire division in the Great War was a man called Blinker Hall. And in a book I read about him, it taught me not only about the code breakers that I was primarily writing about, but this huge network he had. He had agents on every continent, probably not Antarctica, but, you know, anywhere there was action, he had special agents in the field. And that had only increased by the time the next World War came around. So I had spent a lot of time writing about the people behind the desks who were doing all the code breaking, and I wanted to kind of explore a little more what these agents in the field were doing and what they would be like and how they would be operating. And one thing I definitely learned in my research for the First World War is that every time there's an agent, you can bet there's a counter agent nearby. They were constantly playing Germany, agents, England. They called themselves their opposite number, and they were always trying to see what each other were into. So I figured if there really was a German agent hiding in the woods of North Carolina, the rumors said, there would really be someone looking for him. So that's where my Sterling character came in. I figured he's the one on the hunt for this agent hiding in the woods.
The idea of espionage in the First World War is fascinating to me because the United States at the time was, of course, not interested in this at all. What we considered ungentlemanly conduct of reading others' mail. And they were very adamant that we didn't want to have any sort of thing to do with it. And that ends up, of course, being very, very foolish because whether we like it or not, other people are getting involved in our business. One of the great triggers for us getting involved in World War One was the Zimmerman telegram, which was leaked to us by British intelligence, who made sure that it was translated from German and Mexican into English before they passed it along to us. So just in case we weren't really sure.
they wanted no confusion.
yeah, absolutely. The difference between America's interest in intelligence work in World War One and how we reluctantly got into it in World War II, I'm not trying to tell you what you ought to write about, but, you know, that's a pretty interesting story as well, because we came to the intelligence game reluctantly and rather late, but like we always do, we jumped in with both feet when we finally realized, well, I guess we're going to have to do this thing. We better do it to the best of our ability. Maybe a story perhaps of an OSS agent whose father or mother was a British agent in World War One. There you go. There's an idea for you, absolutely free.
awesome.
As a general rule, as an author, you're working on another book. As soon as you finish one book and send it off to the publisher, and then they start doing all of the things that they do, including setting up publicity and so forth, you get busy on another book, right?
Oh, yeah, several of them, actually.
Yeah. So what is the next book going to be about? We won't dwell unduly on it, but since we have a chance to talk to you about it, what's the next book going to be?
The next one that comes out is called A Beautiful Disguise, and it will come out in August of 2023 here, just in a couple months. So this is the start of a new series called The Imposters. It's about two siblings, Lord Yates and Lady Marigold Fairfax. He's an earl, and she's his big sister. And when they inherited the estate, they discovered that their father had spent all the money on basically entertainment. And so they had to find a way to earn a living, which is a bit frowned upon in 1909 England. So they are very secretive about it. They started a private investigative firm, and they are spying on their own peers, but they're using very interesting methods. Basically, they were raised by the entertainers that their father was bringing through all the time. So they have backgrounds in theater and acrobatics and the circus, and they're using these skills to spy on people. So it's got a lot of comedic elements. It's got a lot of heart and soul and questions about identity and, you know, are you who your title says you are, or are you someone else? Are you who people think you are when they look at you, or are you hiding something beneath your mask? So that's the first book is about Lady Marigold and a client that they take on who, of course, turns everything upside down, as they always do in these books. So that one will release in August, and the second book in the series I have also written already and turned in, and that one's called A Noble Scheme, and it'll be out the following year, in probably January, I think.
Well, both of those sound like very interesting books, and hopefully your publisher will get back in touch with me about them again, and we can do this again. So, folks want to get in touch with you. Do you encourage people to email you or mostly use Instagram or Twitter or something like that to get a hold of you?
I love getting emails. I call myself an email addict. I have it up all the time. So you can get my email address on my website. So there's a contact form there as well. So I definitely welcome hearing from readers, hearing from aspiring writers, just people interested in history. I love a good conversation about any of those things that I'm passionate about. And you can also find me on the major social media. I'm always at Rosanna M. White. So make it nice and easy for you to find me everywhere.
So one thing we ought to mention is that these are Christian novels, and that the characters in them are not paper saints, that they are real people who struggle with the same things that people of faith always struggle with through the centuries and still struggle with, that how do we fit into the will of God and so forth. What would you say is the abiding theme that runs through both of these weirdly connected stories in Yesterday's Tides?
It's that God sees us where we are. We might not know exactly where we are in terms of the paths our lives are going to take, but God knows. He knows where we are on our path. He knows where that path is going. He sees what we can never see, and he shapes us into exactly who we need to be to do his will and bring him glory if we just follow him and open ourselves up to doing his will and bringing him glory above all. So the characters all have their individual paths that they have to follow and their individual struggles and, you know, wrestling with faith sometimes, wrestling with the people around them often. But at the heart of it, they have to learn what we all learned, that the heart of humanity hasn't changed, but even more, the heart of God toward humanity hasn't changed. And he's always going to be there guiding us and leading us and giving us exactly what we need to be his children.
Rosanna M. White, our guest today, on the bookshelf. It's our first time talking to her, but I hope that it won't be the last. This is a marvelous novel, Yesterday's Tides, from Bethany House, which is a division of Baker Publishing Group. And Rosanna, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it, and I look forward to our next time together.
I look forward to it, too. Thanks so much for having me. Oh, it was fun. Anytime at all.
All right, wonderful. Thanks so much, and God bless you.
You too. Have a great week.
Our thanks again to Rosanna M. White, who is the author of Yesterday's Tides, a compelling World War II dual-time tale that also involves World War I, all set in Ocracoke, North Carolina. It's from Bethany House, which is a division of Baker Publishing Group. We'll see you next week right here on the bookshelf on WTBF and on your favorite podcast as well on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Make sure you visit the podcast and check out some of the interviews that are archived there. Over 500 of them are now archived, going back a decade or so. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Dockery. Thanks for listening, and God bless.